Blog Talk Radio.
Weather today in the greater Cincinnati area.
I love you so badly, I could...
They're solid plastic, so don't settle for imitation.
But the senator, while insisting he was not intoxicated, could not explain his nudity.
Welcome to Ringside Wrap, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we bring you the latest news and information on major pro wrestling and MMA promotions, the occasional history lesson, and interviews with legends of yesterday and stars of today. And now, the GWH Radio Network presents Ringside Wrap.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Ringside Wrap on this Wednesday, August 22nd, 2012, 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on the East Coast. I am Mike Sempervivi, and Les Thatcher is away again this week, as he said last week. And joining me again, as always, are our third Beatle, or fourth Beatle, I guess I should say, if Rich still counts as a member of the band. From the Charleston Post and Courier, Mr. Mike Moynihan. Mike, how are you this evening?
Doing great. Mike, how are you?
Not too bad. And in fact, we're going to have the fifth Beatle on as well, joining us at about 8:30. Brutal Bob Evans is going to join us, hot off his unfortunate loss. To him, it was an unfortunate loss, at least to Adam Cole at a couple of weeks ago in Providence. So he's going to be on talking about that and see what's going on with him. But I do want to say, you know, being in the Mid-Atlantic, a happy one-year anniversary of the earthquake that rocked us. Did that
Which
not affect
one?
You guys down there?
No.
Oh, it's just the 5.8 magnitude earthquake. And I can't remember where it was. I think it was located in Virginia, but caused some damage in Washington and the capital.
Yeah.
Actually, I don't know if you remember that one.
Yeah, now that you mention it, I do. But, you know, we didn't have much of an effect. We've probably had more of an effect from a fault line that runs right through Somerville, which is sort of a distant suburb of Charleston. We get little tremors every once in a while from that. But, yeah, now that you mention it, I do remember that. And you probably felt it pretty good up in your neck of the woods.
Yeah, that's kind of funny. It was just like you felt an 18-wheeler drive by. You were inside, and it was just like, you know, if an 18-wheeler just blew past your house, that's kind of what it was like, and it was like, what the hell was that? So then we followed up on it the next week with the hurricane, which those are always fun.
Yeah, it's that time of year.
I just remember after the earthquake and the hurricane, it was like, okay, is there a locust going to now just like swoop in here? It was a bad stretch there for a couple of weeks, but
yeah.
This is the last time we talk, Mr. Moynihan. What have you been doing? How are you?
Yeah, doing pretty good, you know, doing my usual thing, wearing the many hats that I wear here at the newspaper, and as a wrestling confidant, advisor, reporter, columnist, et cetera, you know, advising young talent along the way, but everything is going pretty well, can't complain.
Now, have you had a chance to, I don't know if you had a chance to see or hear it all about this past Sunday, SummerSlam, and then the Raw that followed it.
Yes.
Even the Raw that preceded it, because I didn't get a chance to talk to you, you know, with Brock Lesnar and then that whole deal. What did you think? What have you thought of the last couple of weeks here? It seems to be every year WWE's gotten a thing. It's either the stage falls on Mr. McMahon or CM Punk being, you know, or Nexus, whatever it is.
Yeah.
What do you think about this year's Summer Blockbuster?
You know, I just didn't think it had that big show feel to it that SummerSlam traditionally has. The crowd was at the Staples Center in L.A. was pretty flat. Chris and Dolph had a pretty good match to start things off, but everything in between was sort of just fell very flat. And then I think there was a lot of expectation for the Lesnar Triple H match, and you know it was pretty intense, but it wasn't near as intense as Brock's match with John Cena earlier this year. And I felt a little let down. I mean, it was a sort of thumbs in the middle show, but I just didn't feel like I saw a blockbuster event.
What did you think about Sheamus and Del Rio? You know, about LA being a flat crowd. One of the things that they've loved over the last couple of years is they've loved themselves some Randy Orton, and on Raw, obviously he came out to a monster reaction, and then for reasons that I think we brought up before, he obviously was not on this SummerSlam and was not going to be, even though they brought him back for TV right before this. Obviously, they reacted to him and the Alberto Del Rio Sheamus, which, you know, Del Rio probably should have been put in a better position a long time ago. And I think, I don't know if this is hurting him or not. Sheamus, I do like the fact he's been a long-reigning champion and he's shown guile and I think people have gotten behind him, but what do you think about the Orton insertion and this being just another blow to Del Rio's kind of run here, because he's been supposed to have been champion about 75 times now?
Yeah, it's just hit or miss with him. I thought it was – I didn't really like the cheap finish. I thought it was maybe okay if it was on SmackDown and they were building up for SummerSlam. But not on SummerSlam, you know. It just didn't come off well, and I think that was one of the major disappointments on the show. You've got a world title now that really doesn't mean a heck of a lot.
On the flip side, was CM Punk's long reign, and it got extended out. And I was one of those people who were a proponent of him not losing the title until he faces off with The Rock at the Royal Rumble. I think it can mean so much for so many different reasons too.
Yep.
Even just in the historical pro wrestling sense, which Punk obviously is more than aware of, where, you know, a long title reign matters. And, you know, it has been quite impressive with him. What did you think about how that's gone? And obviously they seem to not be able to – they have to beat up announcers. You know, they got to make fun of JR, make fun of Jerry Lawler to get somebody over. But what did you think about how that whole thing went down?
There were mixed feelings about that as well. I thought I think Punk is doing a really nice job with the title, and in his case, it's apparent that the belt really means something. He recognizes the history and tradition behind that belt. I know you have to get heat. You have to take desperate measures to get heat, and attacking Lawler was probably going a little bit overboard. I guess they felt he had to do that to get the heat that he needed. But, you know, there's still going to be a lot of people who cheer for CM Punk, especially against John Cena. I mean, I don't care what he does. There's just a huge Punk contingent. And no matter what he does, they're still going to be in his corner, and they're still going to be booing Cena. And I'm just wondering if they're ever going to pull that trigger and turn Cena heel. I mean, is there any situation out there that would really, you know, they would really go ahead and turn Cena heel? I thought it might happen with The Rock this past year. And, you know, if they match those two up together at WrestleMania next year, maybe they'll do it then. But something's got to change with Cena. I mean, it just, you know, he's a great spokesman for the company and at times is the face of the promotion. But I think eventually they're going to have to pull that trigger and turn him heel. And, you know, that's going to be a big splash in the company.
I've always been in the camp that, to me, it's only time that can do that to Cena, where his, you know, fan base, you know, grows up and outgrows him. And, you know, obviously the little brothers and the ones that follow up, you know, don't want to do. That's when I think it would be time with him. To me, it's the presentation of the character, which this is another thing as time goes on, too. It's harder and harder to get the genie back in the bottle of. I think if Cena was just – there were a couple times last year when he when he was actually angry after losing to, to CM Punk and went after Del Rio. And there were a couple of times he destroyed Kane.
Yeah.
People got behind him because it's, you can still be funny. He's still witty. He's got all those things, but he's just such a – he comes across as such a schmuck. And I was Brian Alvarez and I on Observer Live, you're talking about Kofi Kingston, my son's favorite wrestler, Kofi Kingston, Sin Cara, guys like that. And, you know, it's – you don't think of Kofi Kingston in those terms, but then he comes out on Monday night with wrestling buddies or whatever they're called now, bashing buddies, whatever.
Yeah, right.
It's like – it's amazing to be watching a show that's aimed basically at like 6 and 8 year olds and 10 year olds on at a time where no responsible parent would ever let their child, at least in my opinion, be up watching TV, let alone pro wrestling.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's true.
it's amazing, and you know, the further that, and Kofi is a character. Unless his head will explode hearing this. Look, I'm not Kofi Kingston or his accountant. If he wants to clap his hands and go through the motions and be Kofi Kingston, cool. I really don't have a problem with that. But when John Cena, that's where the problem, and that's where I just think that they're really, they missed the boat of PG doesn't have to be, you know, cornball nonsense playing to the lowest common denominator of, you know, brain facilitation.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely agree.
I don't know. I just there's another thing too, and should mention this before because we're going to break here in a couple minutes. But what did you think about the fact that they seem to leave open the possibility of Triple H Brock Lesnar 2? Or I guess that's what people have said. That Dave Meltzer, I think, had said that, or you know, they may be looking towards that. What are your opinions on doing it a second time?
Well, if it happens, I don't necessarily want to see it at WrestleMania. You know, I think they would have to do it before, probably at the Royal Rumble. And if they do it again, I mean, you know, Brock has got to continue to win. And I don't know if Hunter's going to want to lay down for him two consecutive times. I mean, you know, I'm a firm proponent of Lesnar just steamrolling his way through all opposition until we get to WrestleMania. And to have him lose to Triple H any time before that point would still be a major mistake. But, you know, can you see Hunter dropping two straight to Lesnar? I don't know, but I understand that's the – they're definitely shooting for the rematch.
Well, I got a good one for you. Let's just say what if.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a lot of this, you know, a lot of people have thought about Brock Lesnar and The Undertaker at WrestleMania, which would make complete and utter sense if you wanted to do that. That's one of the few things you could do that could throw doubt into The Undertaker. And they did this last year with Shawn Michaels and Triple H.
Sure.
What about, and again, and I guess I'll get to my reasonings afterwards, but can you ever foresee a possibility of Brock Lesnar, The Undertaker, and Triple H at WrestleMania?
In a triple threat?
In a triple threat because, and this is my reasoning behind it, it's the only thing on the card that you can say is bigger than Rock Cena 2 or Punk Austin. I think even Punk Austin, because those guys can make the claim that, no, the three of us combined are far bigger than what's going on there and we want a bigger cut. But but more than that, it's just, it gives some, it rests The Undertaker a little bit more so he doesn't have to go full bore. It brings doubt into the mind of fans who go, well, could Triple H want revenge from last year? Or could, you know, Brock Lesnar's a danger? And all of that sort of stuff kind of tying into each other. That's why I think it could actually work if you did something like that. Of course, the drawback is, again, Triple H never got his revenge on Brock Lesnar, which I wonder if how important that is to him. And I could see that being very important to him, even though logically when you run the company, it makes no sense. That's one of those times when people go, it's fake, and, you know, it's actually okay to say that because just that boggles my mind. But I think that's something that could be, I don't know. I wouldn't want to see it, but I could see that making some sense.
Well, it's something that they would, you know, it's something they could probably come up with. I mean, you know, the triple threat deal with those three especially would be very intriguing. You know, the only major setback I see would be, you know, would Undertaker really want to put his undefeated streak on the line at WrestleMania in a three-way?
Well, That would be the thing, and I guess
you know, because you know, I mean, that streak is big, and personally, I'm not a fan of three ways, four ways, whatever. You know, I like mano y mano. I like, you know, one, if especially when a big issue or a title is involved, and it's, certainly with the Undertaker's streak on the line, you know, I just don't know if a three-way. I mean, that would be an easy out if he did lose that match to end the streak, and you know, I don't even think he should ever end the streak, but that's another issue.
No, dear God, no, and it's probably up against the break here, even though producer Rich actually hasn't jumped in and yelled at me about it, so go to break right now, and we'll be right back, and then hey, don't forget, Brew Bob Evans at 8:30, we'll be right back.
Georgia wrestling fans, you're going to want to make your plans to be at Johnny G's the first, third, and fifth Sunday of every month, 2 p.m. bell time, for Rampage Pro Wrestling television taping. And fans, if you're in Middle Georgia, make sure that you watch Rampage Pro Wrestling on Fox 24, Saturday 9 a.m. on the My 41.2, Saturday at 10 p.m. Cox Communications Cable, Thursday 8, Saturday at noon, and of course, Rampage Rewind, the one-half-hour show on Cox Communications throughout the schedule. Fans, be there.
Hi, I'm Jody Peterman. We know that no one understands what you need better than you do. We take care to guide you through the legal process, ensuring that you're able to make the decisions that are best for you. If you have a personal injury, criminal, or family law issue, please take a look at our website to learn more about our practice. We offer a free initial consultation for personal injury cases. Give us a call at 229-375-5680. We have a reputation for being accessible and treating our clients well. We look forward to hearing from you.
Hello, I'm Guy Terry of Terry and Peterman. At Terry and Peterman, we're committed to representing the hardworking residents of South Georgia in personal injury, criminal, and family law matters. For years, we have worked with college students in this area to ensure legal issues do not disrupt their academic careers. We also represent military families struggling with divorce and family law issues. We rely upon over 30 years of combined experience to provide aggressive representation for our clients.
This is Miss Rachel from The Empire, formerly known as Platinum Champions of Wrestling. Every Friday night, The Empire presents the best in professional wrestling
at the Academy Theater in Avondale State.
We're also at the Masquerade every month or so.
Check us out on Facebook. Just look for Platinum Championship Wrestling.
And you'll get the latest details on all the hottest action from The Empire,
formerly known as Platinum Championship Wrestling.
We get it. That's every Friday night at the Academy Theater and at the Masquerade as well every month. We'll see you there. All right, we're back here on Ringside Wrap. Mr. Mike Moneyham joined by me, Mike Semper, VV, and talking a little bit about WWE there in the opening segment. I did want to pass this along, Mike, in case your TV isn't on right now. Nothing. The Nationals and the Braves, which means the Braves aren't losing yet.
Oh, they've started their colossal collapse. Happens every year, you know. I mean, they're a poorly managed team. What can I say?
I tell you, it's, you know, being a fan of the teams that I am, usually I'm on the other end of this. So, of course, we're both tweeting in the last couple of nights since this year. And it's just, it pains me that I'm writing these things about the Nats, and then you'll pop up with one about the Braves, mm-hmm. and it actually kind of hurts a little bit. But it's...
We can never beat the Nationals. We can't have, you know, even when the Nationals were pretty bad, we still couldn't beat them. You know, they've got our number. Let's face it.
How'd you guys ever do against Montreal?
Yeah, that too.
We're talking a little bit again. Obviously, we've got Brutal Bob Evans joining us at 8:30 here, and we're talking mostly about WWE and the beginning here, but. Obviously, I know you got your Observer and got your email from Dave, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. The Hall of Fame ballots are out, and this is always a
highly entertaining time.
Yeah.
You know, fun for me because I love history, fun for other people because they just love to fight. But biggest things this year, and you know, I know we're going to talk about this more as the weeks go on and everything, so we won't get into the minutiae of it or anything like that. But one of the biggest things, differences this year is John Cena and Hiroshi Tanahashi for their respective countries, and we really won't talk about Tanahashi here, but when it comes to John Cena, still in the prime of his career, still at a very young age in the whole nine yards, but he fits the criteria to go into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
As an old school head here, where do you come down on, I got 10 spots here, does he deserve to be in? Yes. But do I have to put him in now? What say you?
No. No, I don't have to put him in now. There'll be a time for John Cena. I'm more concerned about some of the guys on the ballot who don't have that many chances left and who should be in the hall. So those are the guys I'm mostly concerned with.
Got a addition this year that I had actually asked Dave about a couple years ago, and you didn't respond, but I'm sure I'm not the only one who ever did this. The Sharp brothers, I don't know personally where they fall into your wheelhouse as far as knowledge or anything like that, but I wonder why they weren't in when they look at the history of Japanese wrestling and you go, Rikidozen, Fez, Blassie, the Sharp brothers, who there wasn't a whole lot of footage of them because they wrestled around the West Coast and up into Canada, but at a time where the Kangaroos and there were so many great tag teams on the East Coast, they were the epitome of tag team on the West Coast and in Japan for a decade. Really, it was only a decade, really roundabouts, as far as them being a team, but it was one hell of a decade. Do you know anything about them?
Yeah, they were big guys who were very serious type wrestlers and always drew very big gates and well respected among the veterans. So, you know, that's one team I'm kind of surprised that isn't already in the Hall of Fame, and I don't know why. You know, most people probably remember the younger Iron Mike Sharp, who worked for WWE some years ago. But you know, these guys were big gate attractions, and they were fantastic wrestlers. One of those teams that just hasn't made the cut yet.
No, they were added on. I had not seen them before. I can't even remember if they were on and they fell off or if they – I don't know exactly what the deal was, so it's kind of surprising. Now, they popped up in Japan too, which greatly increases their chances, for obvious reasons. Ironically enough, Red Bastien was added on to the historical performers era candidates, and I think we talked about it. I don't know why he was not in before. I know you could probably say, well, this, that, and the other, but I think with the achievements outside of wrestling and how he is spoken about, I think people deserve points for that in lots of different Hall of Fames, but most certainly in a pro wrestling one. Red Bastien, do you think he goes in?
I think he will definitely get the sentimental vote. I think there is a good chance he will get in, and you know, I'm really not sure if he's been on the ballot before, but, I mean, he's another guy who certainly, he meets all of the credentials that a Hall of Famer should. And, one of the great aerial guys. I mean, I don't think anybody ever had a better flying head surges than Red did. And, you know, you kind of have to consider his contributions outside the ring, too. Everybody loved Red, and he was a long time stalwart in the Cauliflower Alley Club, and just an overall good guy, but a tremendous wrestler, you know, real high flyer who wrestled, you know, most of the top names in the business. And you talk about tag team specialists, he and Billy Red Lion, his half brother Luke Lyon, you know, the great team they formed, and then Billy Red Lions, the Flying Redheads. So great tag team wrestler as well.
And you really can't – it's tag teams are so woefully underrepresented, and the Assassins,
they were real close. They're going in this year. I
hope so.
I'll be stunned if they're not. But I look at a name like Enrique Torres, who's one of the guys that I've voted for the last couple of years, probably will do it again here. I don't see a reason to change him. And one of the reasons why is he's one of those guys I grasp onto as, if I don't vote for him, well, you know, there are a couple guys where I think history, they're going to be fine in over time, and if they don't make it in now, they most certainly will go in later on as a specialty, like an Andre DeGlane or somebody like that.
Yeah, Andre Guitar is one of my favorites. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, and is there anybody that you think, like, who is there one guy who you vote for because, again, you're concerned with, you know, I got to keep this guy going?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, since we're talking about teams, two teams that should have been in there long ago are the Assassins and Gene Ole Anderson.
Oh, God, yeah.
I mean, that's a no-brainer there.
Well, that's one of the things when the rock and roll, and not that I have anything against putting the rock and roll in, but it's one of those things where I don't think you can put them in. If you don't put the Andersons or the Assassins in first, it's almost like in England where people say the name Big Daddy. That's great, and I'm not going to have any argument against him, but I know for a fact Mick McManus belongs in first, so that's where my vote would go.
Right.
Do you think, is it just, I don't know, I think people, I don't know, has only turned them into a little bit of a cult figure maybe where I can see them getting in, if not this year, relatively soon too. Do you think the push is there to get them in now?
I think they should just get there on their merit alone, you know, regardless of the notoriety or anything that's happened in the last 5, 10, 15 years. I mean, those are bona fide Hall of Famers. You know, I don't know if Ole, to be honest, you know, Gene's been gone for many years, and I don't know if Ole would care one way or the other if he got in.
So.
Because I did a column on him some years ago. I think maybe I sort of instigated something when I said, Ole, you know, you haven't been in the Observer Hall of Fame yet. And he said, well, what is that? Who cares, you know? And I said, well, these are the guys you're going against. And I named a bunch of Lucha Libre guys. And you can imagine the reaction. I won't say it on the show, but it elicited quite a few four-letter words, and I don't know who that, you know, what is. Never heard of him and don't care. And
I think one of the first Wrestling Observer Lives I ever heard way back in the Yada days was Ole.
That sort of prompted. Yeah, my column sort of prompted his appearance on there, I think. And poor Dave. Oh, I knew Dave was going to catch it.
Well, you know, if he did get voted in and, you know, he found out about it, he would go, well, good, I should have been there a long time ago, dumbass. Bobby wouldn't care, but, you know, and I think he'd probably get his 2 cents in if he could. June Byers is actually another one that stuck out to me because she's another one where I probably would have forgot if you say, hey, name some people who belong in the Hall of Fame who aren't there. I'd reel them off. And I would probably forget that June Byers isn't in there. She's one of those names that's always been synonymous with women's wrestling. There was the Mildred Burke, all of that stuff.
You kind of
know almost better than anybody. To me, she belongs in, but what about you?
Well, yes, June Byers definitely deserves to be in there. But once again, if we're, and I know this might upset some long-term historians, but, you know, I really think, and I do, I will say I think June Byers definitely deserves to be in. But I think Moolah's got to be in before June Byers. I mean, Moolah played such a huge role for so many years. She was responsible for sort of keeping women's wrestling alive. She trained just about everybody that came through the ranks back in the 60s and 70s. And, you know, if you ask, you know, Joe Blow off the street, you know, who has he heard of? If you bring up the name June Byers, they may or may not know. But if you say the Fabulous Moolah, everyone knows Moolah. And I just think, you know, I think she's another one who should have been in before now. And there seems to be some
reluctance. You know, she wasn't, in some wrestling circles, she wasn't the most popular person because she really, she was a tough, you know, she did business like a guy would do business back in the day, and they didn't like that. But, you know, to me, Moolah should already be in the Hall of Fame.
You want to get to her again after we talk to Bob, or even with Bob, but we need to get to set
yeah.
Bob. Brutal Bob Evans is going to be joining us here after the break, so please stay tuned.
Yo, what's up? This is the Black Eyed Peas, and we're here for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Music is one of the most important things in our lives, but nothing is more important than life itself. When you drink and drive, you're risking the life of yourself and the lives of everybody on the road. Don't plan to drive, just plan ahead.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Can you tell if this burger contains bacteria that could cause kidney failure? Listen. Can't, can you? You can't see it either. There's only one way to tell if you've cooked meat and poultry to a bacteria-killing temperature. Use a food thermometer. It's not an extra step or a nice to have. Raw or undercooked meat may contain bacteria that can make you very sick or worse. One in six Americans will get sick from food poisoning this year, and roughly 3,000 will die. But you can keep your family safer by using a food thermometer every time. Learn more about this and other important information. Check your steps at foodsafety.gov. That's foodsafety.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
Hello there, I'm Patty Lovelace. Kids have a lot on their plates these days. It can be hard as parents to stop and think about how something like learning music now can help them in the future. Music helps kids because it's a performing art, and children need to learn to perform well to succeed in society. Getting an 85% on a math test is pretty good, but hitting 85% of the right notes during a concert isn't good enough for most music students or their teachers. A special kind of practice and preparation goes into the discipline of performing music, and it helps kids perform better in all areas of their lives.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. March is Music in Our Schools Month.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected, but it turns out I wasn't alone.
At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of vets who've got your back. Whether it's managing the transition home or everyday stuff
like finding a nice sweater for my dog.
Sweater?
Okay, maybe not that. Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We got your back.
Brought to you by IAVA and the Ad Council.
All right, we're back here on Ringside Wrap. Mr. Mike Mooneyham joined by me, Mike Sempervivi, and we're very happy to bring on our next guest. Yes, he is the fifth Beatle, and he's joining us after maybe my eyes were deceiving me, but I can't believe I'm saying this, a loss. A loss right near his stomping grounds in Providence, Rhode Island, only 2 weeks ago here. Mr. Bob Evans, Brutal Bob, I'm happy you're joining us. And I'm wondering though how you're feeling right now. And were my eyes deceiving me there? Did I actually see that finish happen?
You did. How you doing, guys? What's going on?
Hey, Bob.
Mike, it's Semp. I know you all too well, but Mr. Mooneyham, it's a pleasure. I listen to you all the time, read your stuff. It's a pleasure to finally get a chance to talk to you and put Sempervivi in his place. So.
All right, thanks. Big fan of you too, Brutal Bob.
Thank you. Yeah, it was quite the scene. Yeah, a lot of stuff has happened since I talked to you last, Semp. A lot of stuff, but a lot of ROH centered stuff. But if you guys are talking about something else, I can jump in. So I was just catching up with my America's Got Talent, so I had many more important things to watch with the family.
Well, I do want to report to everyone right now who may be listening to this show, much to my son's dismay, Teddy Roosevelt once again did not win the president's race that takes place. So, and the Nationals and the Braves still tied at zero. So, no, but we talked a little bit about WWE at the beginning, and then we were talking a little bit about the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame, which whose ballots went out. So the floor is yours, sir, actually, because I know you do have a lot going on, and we haven't talked in a while. What's going on with you right now?
Oh, lots of. I mean, we can talk right away with the last TV tapings that I didn't see you at, and they're finally they're going to hit. They're going to hit. They hit last week, and they're going to hit this week. So that was quite the scene. So the crowd was way up in Baltimore, which was good to see. And then Providence, we sold it out. First turn away crowd in Ring of Honor since New York, I think. So it's. They were very, very pleased with the attendance there. I think we topped out at about 8. I think they built the building out for 850, and they were turning people away after 850. The fire codes wouldn't allow it anymore. It was in a big part of the Rhode Island Convention Center, and it was great because it was nice to drive 10 minutes. You know, I live in Swansea, Massachusetts, which is right over the second town over Providence, you know, the Rhode Island, Massachusetts line. So it was a nice little ride in, and you know, got to actually spend an afternoon with the family and ride over to the show, and I was real proud. Everybody banded together. It was kind of a rough. We had a few people missing. A few people. Jim Cornette couldn't make it up. He was busy doing production work for the TV, and that ran long. So Delirious ran the whole thing, which was fine. And then we had actually a couple of the local wrestling guys. From PWF Northeast, Matt West, and a few of the other guys, which I just want to mention them publicly because they really helped with some running around doing a lot of the production duties. And when you're called to do that on the fly, it's not always easy. So, but they managed to put together a good, solid pay-per-view. I saw the pay-per-view. It was the stream was good, thank God. So, and like I said, everybody banded together. And, yeah, Adam Cole's the real deal, guys. He beat me clean in the ring, and he had a lot of nice things to say, and I give that respect right back to him. Adam Cole is one of the future guys in Ring of Honor and beyond. I mean, he's 23 years old, and you already talked about, you know, you already see how well-spoken he is and how classy he is, and he's every bit of it in the ring, too. So, and like I said, my guys, Mr. Marcellia and Mr. Taven, in the second match, the four-way for the contract, didn't quite get the contract, but they represented themselves real well. And there was a picture of them, I think it's on my Facebook somewhere, but it was a picture of them squaring off in the middle of a Ring of Honor ring, and I got to see those two on national TV together for the first time. It was kind of a proud moment for me. So I wouldn't say I quote-unquote trained them, but I definitely mentored them and helped push them to the next level. So it's always cool when you see stuff like that, you know. So,
and I know you're going to be a little bit biased here, as well you should be, but yeah. You know, I've said this before even on this show. You know, yeah, Vinny didn't win the contract, but it's hard for me to think that he's not going to be in ROH and is going to have a place there. Taven, obviously, we know what the deal is there with him, as he's, you know, certainly on a certain track.
Yep.
Absolutely. But as far as Vinny's prospects go, and being a guy who I think people are going to be seeing soon in ROH, you know, more and more, what are people to look for in him, and what's he been like as far as, you know, him coming up?
Well, he, I mean, I don't know how this, interesting this is for everybody else, but it's kind of a cool success story. And I know a lot of the boys listen to the show, too, and it's something I think should be a nice little success story. And again, his isn't finished being written yet, but Vinny was basically about 4 years ago, basically kind of a joke. He was practically a backyard guy. He was he had tattoos like Randy Orton. He used to call himself Nero. And he used to do like a bunch of Randy Orton stuff, and none of us really. I mean, we liked him. We didn't, but I didn't. He didn't really run in the same circles as we did, but and we liked him, but we didn't have a lot of respect for him as far as a guy who's just kind of being a knockoff of somebody and not really trying to get to the next level. And then I guess one day, Vinny got sick and tired of being sick and tired, and a couple years ago, he just said, "Hey, I want to take it to the next level. Who do I talk to?" And they kind of pushed him in the direction of Bennett and you know, Spike Dudley and myself and a few other guys that kind of, and like I said, he was always a very likable kid and totally reinvented himself. He's a tattoo artist by trade anyway, so he was able to redesign his tattoos and just kind of just change his whole look. And now he gets a little bit of that. He echoes Jeff Hardy because the Hardys were such a big influence on him. But what I thought was the coolest thing is a couple weeks ago, Vinny wrestled in Fall River, Mass against Matt Hardy, and he had a chance to ride with him on the road, and he asked Matt, he said, you know, I've been getting some crap from a few of the internet guys about, you know, being kind of a Jeff Hardy ripoff, and Matt said, dude, he's my brother, and I don't see it. He said, you be Vinny, and you be the best Vinny you can, and you'll be fine in this business. And so, you know, Vinny had a funny line. He said, dude, if Matt Hardy says it's okay, then it's okay. So, and
yeah.
Like I said, he's just, he's one of my, you know, he's, I give him a lot of crap on, you know, obviously publicly for business reasons, but I'm very fond of Vinny, and I think Vinny has a real bright future in this business. And Jim Cornette and Delirious think the same thing. They were, he went to one of the trial camps in November, really impressed. And he went to the last one a couple weeks ago. That's another thing we could talk about. The one we had a couple weeks ago, the first week of August, and just impressed him once again. And just, you know, like I said, put on 5 or 10 pounds of muscle, you know, got new gear, and always add something to the presentation every single time they see him, which is a lesson to young wrestlers who want to blame politics and blame, you know, Triple H for the fall of the business, and, you know, Jim Ross doesn't like me, so I'll never get a job in this town again, and whatever the excuse of the week is, I'm sure Jim Cornette being outdated has something to do with it, and you know, I have a whole list of them. I used to use them myself, so I can pass that list off. So once I realized that it might actually have something to do with me, I certainly did a lot better. So, but yeah, Taven's on an upward trajectory. In that four way, I really thought Antonio Thomas looked great, and I really think Mr. Marshall is somebody we should look for too. You know, big strong guy, very arrogant. You know, very. Kind of reminds me a little bit of Bennett, that same kind of attitude. So, but I feel good about Ring of Honor's future, you know, and with the way Mondo stepped up, the way a few of the other guys have stepped up, you know, me being able to do what I can do and help lend my experience to help some of the younger guys, I feel real good about Ring of Honor. You know,
Bob, if there were two or three guys right now, you could say, oh, these guys wouldn't miss a beat jumping to WWE. Who would they be? You know, two or three guys.
Two or three guys from anywhere or just
from Ring of Honor.
From Ring of Honor. Let's see. Missing a beat would be obviously Bennett. I think, you know, as much as I love Mike Bennett, and I'd love to stand by his side for the next 15 years. I think he's tailor made. For that, and I don't know anything. That's not a news. That's not a scoop. That's not anything.
Sure.
He's very happy in Ring of Honor. He's loved his time there. He's learned a lot.
Yeah.
But as far as having a look, an attitude, you know, he has the right attitude. He's very humble. I've known him for 9 years, and he's been the same kid he's always been.
Right.
That's an easy one. Taven could jump right in.
Yeah.
Matt Taven. But there's a lot of guys. I think Adam Cole. I'd like to see Adam Cole hang around for another. Couple years because I think Adam's going to, and this is nothing I haven't said to him, or I will say to him again if he asks me, but he's a little smaller. So I think he's going to have to be, I think he's going to have to be A++.
Right.
Whenever he's seen by anybody in WWE, just because his size, his physical size walking through the door isn't going to knock anybody over. Is he? But he's a good-looking kid, and he's in great shape, don't get me wrong, but he's not 6'5 and 315 pounds. So I think, and I know they kind of waver on that, whether they want it or not. But I'm also real happy with a couple of the New England kids, and I'm just friends with them. I didn't really have much to do with their career, but Max Bauer and Mercedes KV, two kids that just got signed. Max is a big, strong kid, has the look they're looking for, and Mercedes is a very exotic-looking, really beautiful young lady, and I think they're both going to do really, really well. So,
good.
You know,
very good.
It's been a good year for New England, Mike. Pound for pound,
pound for pound.
We were representing. We were the unknown class for a long time, but about 10
Taylor
or 11
Taylor Hendricks.
Well, of course, my girl Taylor. I talked to her the other day. So she's doing well. So two of my favorite redheads are down there now, Tommy Mercer, a.k.a. Crimson, and Taylor. So they're down there, and they're going to represent there very well. So all I can say about Crimson was he was getting harassed at the Harley Race Camp. A couple of years ago, I pulled him aside, and I said in 3 years, he'd be laughing at these guys. And it only took him a year and a half, so that was pretty good. So,
one name you brought up in that four-way, and he's kind of a forgotten-about guy for those who never had a chance to see Ohio Valley. And, you know, when he came to the Heartbreakers, anybody that had a chance to see there, the pinnacle of the stuff they were doing in Ohio Valley with Dancing on the Desk and Dean Hill and Jim Cornette looking up, I mean, it was great. They bring him up to the main roster. It's, you know, it was the whole shtick got taken away, and they just lost a lot. But, they, you know, tell me, Thomas, what, you know, people are not, you know, where does he stand right now? And, you know, being, I always forget about him being a Northeast guy. It's like you mentioned Spike Dudley. I always forget about his roots up there. And obviously you don't, because you're there and you came up with these guys. What are we missing with Antonio Thomas, or what can he offer guys?
Oh, God. Well, Tom, that's his real name, Tom, but he's one of my best friends. He's one of my oldest friends in the business. I helped – here's another little tip for young guys. Antonio Thomas got one of his first matches in wrestling because at one of my shows I said, if you help me put these break these chairs down and put them away, you can have a match next show. And he said, okay. So there you go. So sometimes all you have to do is be the guy who puts the chairs away.
There you go.
But he's just a phenomenally talented guy, a guy who he's 30-something, but he looks probably 5 years younger, has always kept himself in excellent shape. I think he had trouble finding his way after he got let go because I think it was very abrupt for him. Well, I don't think he was given a fair shot. I don't know what the story was there. I don't know if he was mentally ready to go. So it took him a little while to come back. But I know for the last couple of years we've been real close. And he runs a school out of Springfield, Springfield, Mass. And he's doing very well, you know, giving back. And I think that's been really therapeutic for him too. But I know he turned some heads on that event. And I know Cornette's always been a big fan of his. So I think it's a matter of time before Antonio jumps in and makes more of a contribution, and he should, because we need that. There's older guys like me, and then there's not that, and there's young guys, but there's not that middle, kind of like late 20s, early 30s guy who's had 7 or 8 years in the business that can kind of still work that style and still be the older kind of veteran guiding hand, and those are the guys that we kind of need. I think that's the void right now that we're missing in Ring of Honor. We have, like, old salty guys like myself, and we have young guys all over the place, but we don't really have those middle guys, you know. But he's definitely a guy that I think real highly of, and I think he could make a big, much bigger contribution. And very dedicated, a student of the sport. We always talk about wrestling. We always talk about things we can do. I know he just started getting into some jiu-jitsu training, not really to start like any MMA competitions, but just to give a different flair to his work, a different, you know, some different ideas. You know, he's always searching for different ideas, and, you know, so, yeah, he's excellent. I really I really can't say enough good things about him. So,
well, please tell him I said hello next time you see him.
Absolutely, I will. Sure.
Did a really long piece on him some years ago. Nice guy.
Yeah, he's great guy. He's always been the same. You know, just it's that developmental system, man. You know,
yeah.
I don't want to talk bad, but I mean, you know, I've had friends come back crazy. I've had friends come back hooked up, hooked on certain things. I've had friends come back and kill themselves. So
it's been tough.
You know, granted, it hasn't happened to me personally, but it's been rough. You know, sometimes I get jealous, and then sometimes I don't.
Yep.
Well, I think it's one of those things where, you know, regardless of what anybody thinks about Chikara, Dragon Gate, Ring of Honor, no matter what the PWG, no matter what your personal opinions are on there, it almost seems to be, I mean, obviously the holy grail is to still get into WWE and getting a developmental contract. Obviously, you know, is giving you the best chance to get into WWE, but
absolutely.
Promotions around the world and Ring of Honor, of course, being one of them, you know, the strength, these promotions need to be strong and need to have strength, because it still seems to be, with the guys that WWE has signed and with the guys who are on top right now, no matter who they are, whether it be Austin Aries or CM Punk or Daniel Bryan, these were all guys who were very serious about their work. They traveled. They worked for a bunch of different people. They worked for a bunch of different promoters. They learned lots of different stuff. I mean, I will never sit here and defend IWA Mid-South. Wouldn't give them any money, not my bag. But lots of guys got a chance to hone their craft from Chris. I mean, you name it. I mean, when you take the deathmatch stuff out of the mix and you look at CM Punk and all these other guys that had a chance to wrestle there, it's important. The strength of these promotions, you know, hinge upon, is it better? I don't know. Would you suggest, Bob, because you've been around for, you know, quite some time, I won't say 48, like the graphic did in Providence. I thought
What did Kevin Kelly say? My birth certificate is right up there with Obama's and shrouded in mystery.
I'll let people believe
what they want to believe. You know?
But from your point of view and having a chance to see and do as much as you have, where do you come down right now as far as, like, a guy like Adam Cole, if he was offered the contract tomorrow to go, hey, come to Florida, obviously it's hard to say don't take it, but what do you think about if, you know, and granted the options would have to be there, you know, continuing to travel around for a young guy, I'm just using him as an example, but to travel around and go, no, you know what, let me hit Harley a little bit more and see if he can get me into Noah and to do different things like that to get more season. Because it seems to be those are the guys who end up rising to the top at the end anyway.
Well, the way I look at it is the Daniel Bryan, Bryan Danielson route is a long one. But remember, Daniel Bryan is one of the few guys that got signed by WWE and went to developmental on his own merits. They were waiting to give him a spot. He went on his own because he didn't want to get stale. So he said, let me go to Florida and let me just stay loose and work TV every week. And it was a good idea. I mean, it showed initiative. But most of the guys, they don't care who you are before you go. But again, I think Adam Cole is somebody who's a quick study and will make it regardless. I just think that being so young and with relatively little experience, I think it would serve him well to hang around for another year. But, of course, if he decides to come up with, you know, I don't really talk to Adam about his business decisions, but, I mean, if he asked me my advice, that's what the advice I would give him. But, of course, I would support him in anything he wants to do because I believe in his talent. And I saw it firsthand, you know. And here's a guy that, without getting too inside baseball on you, but here's a guy who pretty much let me call that whole match. And it was and I put a lot of work and design into it and understood what was going on there. And we were on the same. We had good chemistry right off the bat. And he was listening and he learned and he understood and the mistakes after he took responsibility for just like I did and there were a lot of good things about that and a lot of that was easily evidence to me that he's ready to move on soon, but maybe not as soon as, you know, like I said, that opportunity may come up. But I don't know if it's, like I said, he's not so physically imposing where, you know, you look at it and you go, well, what if Daniel Bryan had gone 2 or 3 years earlier? I don't know if he would have been ready. You know, he had a nice run in Ring of Honor right before we got TV with HDNet. You know, he'd been doing a lot of stuff, going to England, going to Japan, doing all that stuff. And I just think that a guy like Adam would be better served doing that. But again, if he decides to do something else, or, you know, when that opportunity presents itself, then more power to him. I'm a big fan of Adam Cole, and I support him in anything he does. But if he asked me, I would be honest with him and tell him that I think, you know, doing the Ring of Honor thing and traveling around might not be the worst idea at your age, at your experience level. If he was 28, I'd give him a different answer.
Yeah, so. I was going to ask you about that too, Bob. He's 23, so he's still very young. He's got,
very young, yeah.
He's got several years to play with.
Absolutely.
What do you think is that magic cutoff year for, say, a guy who's really got very good wrestling skills, has a lot of talent, but, you know, getting a little long in the tooth? Take, for example, a guy like Adam Pearce. You know, I think Adam's
right,
like in his early 30s, but he's almost, and probably he would admit that, you know, past the prime for any kind of, you know, major job with WWE. What do you think that age is? Like, if, say, a guy is 27 or 28 years old, do you think they're actually at that point a little too old to be seen?
I think it's all dependent on experience level. If somebody wanted to start this business at 28, I wouldn't necessarily talk them out of it, but I'd give them a realistic assessment of where they would be. I'd say, look, it takes... The schedule isn't like it used to be. You know, I heard, by the way, great show last week with Buddy Wayne and Les talking about the old days, but those guys would have 200 matches a year just because there was so much worker going around. Mm-hmm. Now you're lucky if you get 75, 100 matches a year, and that's a busy guy, too. That's not, and, you know, that's, again, Adam's a great example. Here's somebody who caught my eye with his promo, who... I just saw him. Well, I didn't see him, but a few of my guys did because they were at a show at Sheldon Goldberg's New England Championship Wrestling. Said the guy's in great shape, good spirits. You know, he's not as stressful as he back in the day when he was the Ring of Honor booker. Like, seems like he's in a good place. And, you know, here's a guy that could add something to the puzzle of WWE or somewhere else, you know, and you know, or you could even bring him in as somebody, you know, hey, if you don't believe that he's a strong enough wrestler, which I would disagree with, but you could bring him in as a mouthpiece, as a you know, put a suit and tie on him and have him manage one of these, you know, one of these guys that really can't do much talking. You know, that's, I don't know what the cutoff is, Mike, because I'm still pushing to do my thing. So, but, I would, at 39, 48, 22, whatever age I am these days, ask Jim Cornette how I'm supposed to answer that, and I'll answer it.
Okay.
But I'm just saying that's, you know, I'm a couple years older than Adam in real life, so.
Yeah.
And I also heard from a couple different guys that WWE, that isn't as much of an issue as it used to be, because now they realize that maybe they gave the indies short shrift, and now they have to... Because what they did is they totally locked out the indies for about 3 or 4 years, said everybody in the indies sucks, we're not going to talk to them, and then got frustrated when they couldn't find any talent or anybody with any passion. Because Jim Ross will teach you everything you know you need to know if you read his tweets and read his blogs. Jim Ross is the best teacher of how to be a professional wrestler out of anyone, and I don't know if half the people get it. Because he's telling you what to do. He's telling you to have passion in the business, be in great shape, don't take no for an answer, be respectful. Like, it's all there.
Sure.
And I don't know if anybody listens. I don't.
Well, Jesus,
you know?
I don't understand. Buddy Wayne talked about this last week. I left it out. And Bob, you're a trainer. I can't friggin' fathom who walks in. I can understand being lots of things. But how do you go into wanting to be a pro, seeing it on TV, and going out of shape? I don't understand that.
Well, and the thing is too. I mean, whatever people want to say about me, I know the workouts that I put in. And again, I started getting real serious about my physical fitness probably 2 or 3 years ago. So when you're doing it at 36, I probably should have been doing it when I started at 19 or 20, but I always half-assed the gym, and it probably cost me. It cost me financially, it cost me career-wise, but that's fine. You know, hey, I made my decisions. I don't have any regrets. I've had a great, great little run, and none at all. But now at 30, you know, now at 39, almost 40. Sorry, Cornette. Sorry, buddy. But Don't tell. Cut that out if you have to.
Yeah, we'll edit that out.
But like I said, you know, I'm pushing 40 here, guys, and, you know, and a lot of people say this, but I can prove it. I'm in the best shape of my life. I guarantee you, there's probably about 10% of the business that can do the workouts that I do. And that's how hard I put into it. And I'm a part-time guy who has a family and kids and a real job and all this stuff. Yeah. I can't see how anybody – and I manage – what I'm saying is I manage to get to the gym. And I manage to – I do a lot of group classes that are scheduled. I manage to build that into my schedule. Why can't these guys go to the gym when, again, I have two gyms around me that are $10 a month and are open 24 hours a day? So how can you – you know, how can you make an excuse? And plus, there's workouts that I do and that my trainers teach me that are all body weight. You don't even need a gym. You can find a big rock outside and do a ton of stuff with a big rock. I know it sounds silly, but it's true, guys. You know, there's stuff you can do with just about anything. And so there's no excuse. There's no excuse. And especially if you're getting paid to do it.
No.
You know, because Buddy's one of my best friends. We probably talk about it. It's funny because Buddy Wayne is one of my best friends who I've never met. But we talk on the phone 3 or 4 times a week. And it's always the same thing, you know, because Buddy was real big into physical fitness for a long time. And Buddy, who has a really bad heart condition, by the way, and back issues, serious back issues with, like, metal screws in his back, still goes to the gym 6 days a week, has lost 40 pounds, is in the best shape of his life, and he's, you know, got 4 or 5 years on me. And he doesn't even wrestle anymore, guys. But he still wants to be able to get in there and represent his place. And, you know, and he's always on his guys to be in good shape. And then they always make excuses. Or they point to the one or two guys that are in okay shape and that are over in WWE. Well, you can always do that. You can always point to Dusty Rhodes or Mick Foley or all these guys. But those guys are special guys.
Yeah.
You have to at least look athletic. And now that I have a halfway decent shape, I notice that I get looked at differently. I don't get looked at like Mike Bennett does, but I get looked at as a guy who looks like he can carry himself and might actually be a professional wrestler instead of this dumpy guy or overweight guy. And it really does. It's a cosmetic business. I don't know any other way to say it. And with millions of dollars on the line, you know, go to the gym a little bit. You know, watch your diet a little bit. If you feel that strongly about your talent and you feel like you're being held back because of your body, well, you can bang your head against the wall, but all you're going to have is a hurt head at the end of it. It's not going to change. You know, you can yell at God and blame everyone, and like I said, blame Triple H or Dixie Carter or whoever you want to blame, but in the end, that's what it is. And they're not telling you to get on steroids. They're not telling you to become a big, jacked-up person and throw your morals away. All we want you to do is look like a tremendous, larger-than-life athlete. And, you know, John Morrison looks like that, and Grizzly Redwood looks like that, guys. Grizzly Redwood is in incredible shape, and this is a guy who was supposed to die at birth. This is a guy who had tons of operations when he was a kid. This is a guy who, you know, he'll give you a nice little list of why he shouldn't even be in wrestling. And here's a guy who's 5 foot nothing, but has abs of steel and has big biceps and looks like something. So again, if he can do it, if I can do it, if Adam Pearce can whip himself into shape, why can't these young guys do it who are getting paid to do it or want to get paid to do it? You know, it's frustrating to me, you know.
So a guy like Playboy Buddy Rose, even with his ability, is probably not going to make it in 2012.
Well, but if you saw Playboy Buddy Rose when he was younger, he wasn't really in that bad of shape.
Oh,
he got in real bad shape later. But back in the day, he was so incredibly athletic.
He was.
Light on his feet.
Yeah, absolutely.
You could look past that. But, again, I look at him as more of an exception to the rule. And, plus, it was a different business back then, too.
Sure it was.
Well, I think Adonis falls into that category like a Rose, too, where you look at him and you're not really impressed by anything. And then, of course, he became morbidly obese at the end. But it was his ability to flop around, which you don't
think he could
do today.
But you look at a guy like Dick Murdoch, and, again, Dick Murdoch had kind of like this, and it's going to start bad, but it's going to end good, I promise. But he had kind of like a sunken chest, and he had the chicken legs and kind of the big belly.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But he was also 6'4", 250, and was lighter on his feet than any luchador I've ever seen, and he did it drunk and angry all the time. You know what I mean? Like, he just – but here's a guy who – I watched the match the other day because a buddy of mine were upset with a match we had seen where the heel didn't sell very well. And so I said, I'm gonna go watch this out. I'm just gonna go put on wrestling from 1984, and I'm gonna find something. But the first couple matches, I'll find a heel that can sell better than anything we saw in this tape you sent me. And I found Dick Murdoch against one of the Samoans. And not only did Dick Murdoch sell like crazy for the Samoan, but the Samoans, it was Afa, it was Pops. And Afa sold like crazy for Murdoch. And I was like, if these huge, giant men can sell and make people feel sympathy, why can't these smaller guys, because it was like smaller guys that we were watching, so why can't these smaller guys sell for each other? You know, it's a lost art in the business. And we have guys who, you know, and again, this guy's, you know, Dick Murdoch looks like a guy who could beat you up in a bar and you wouldn't think twice about it, you know, but I don't know if he'd even get a shot now, you know?
No, he probably wouldn't, no.
You know,
we were talking a little bit earlier about the Hall of Fame, and I don't know if you've seen the ballots or anything like that. I know you see the after effect from it, but...
I did. I got my first email from good old Mr. Meltzer himself. I was honored.
Oh,
good. I'm an official whatever now.
Well, again, looking up and down, and just things that, you know, you've heard from over the years, and reading The Observer and hearing people talk about it and hearing, you know, us knock names around and things like that. Just a quick glance at the list that you have of it. Is there anybody where you looked at it and go, how is this guy not in? Like a Dick Murdoch or somebody like that? Was there anybody stuck out and you went, this man is going in on my ballot?
Well, I think, I haven't really had a chance to look at it. Don't worry, I'm not embarrassed or anything. I'm just being honest with you. But the one that actually surprised me is you guys were talking the other day about the passing of Red Bastien. And I actually got a chance to meet him because he came up. Jason Sanderson, the Wolfman, brought him up to do some work with the church. And then because Jason was always very involved with Cauliflower Alley back in the day, and Red came up to see a show. And what a kind man. What a nice guy. Like, just and very supportive of, like, young wrestlers and stuff. He's like, I'm so glad that, you know, because my trainer, Jeff Costa, was trained by Killer Kowalski. So he's like, I'm just so happy to see that, you know, Walter's legacy has reached out. Just a real, like, he made you just feel good about yourself. Like, very supportive of what we were trying to do. And you know, a lot of the guys, they kind of look down on you when you weren't, you know, a superstar already, being a young guy, you know, back in my day and all that. And because I know David mentioned that about seeing, like, Brian Danielson and Red was very supportive of him and kind of just gave us that same vibe too. I was like, here's an older guy that doesn't talk down to the young guys, you know, just very supportive. And, you know, I'm glad the business is alive and that kind of a thing. So it was just made such a good impression on me. You know, I felt something when he passed, you know, so, but I don't understand why he's not in it. You always hear phenomenal things about that guy. I haven't heard one bad thing about him. He drew money. He's a great baby face. You know, what's holding him back? Just falling between the cracks or just never seen as the standout guy or what?
Yeah, he was always the life of the party, too. I know Ric Flair has many, many good tales about
I think I caught him on more of a contemplative and sentimental day than I did on a party day. Or maybe I didn't see that part of him. But yeah, I mean, I heard all that stuff, too, and that's cool, too. But as far as, like, you just hear everything about him being a draw, and it's like,
he's a Hall of Famer for sure.
I was surprised that he wasn't in because he's such a big name too. Like, just you know, you just these guys that you see with the names, you know. So
yeah, and he was really great at selling too. I mean, I guess you know you could probably for that era compare him to like Ricky Steamboat. I mean,
absolutely,
that really sell.
I think I'm looking at the list now just because you guys putting pressure on me to do my homework. So I think the Andersons by far should be in. You know, I think Strongbow should be in. But Strongbow was a mentor to one of my mentors. So he's like kind of like a great uncle to me. And Strongbow's always cool to me at TV. So, but he was a big, actually, when he passed, I wanted to get Terry Taylor on because I know you guys had such a good, enjoyable conversation with Terry. And I was trying to get Terry on because Terry was super close to Chief. And he was one of the guys that really helped get Terry through those WWF years. And he rode with him a lot. And so I used to hear a bunch of Strongbow stories from Terry, you know, just a guy who was very knowledgeable and really helped the next generation. I know I hear about him being grouchy and all that stuff, but just a guy that you know, was very, it gave back. I'm a big fan since that's kind of what I'm known for. I kind of, on a lower level, I really kind of gravitate towards the guys who give back to the business, you know. So.
And, you know, Chief really had two separate careers, you know, in the 50s and the 60s. He was over huge in the South as Joe Scarpa.
Right.
And he was a main eventer everywhere he went, Georgia, Florida, came through the Carolinas, but big draw and you know, just a great performer.
Yeah, I never worked with Chief because he was a little bit older, but I worked with Jules. I worked with Frank.
Yeah.
And I loved working with Jules. He was easy.
Yeah.
We had a 26-minute match. He probably sold 24 and a half of it. And then he blew the comeback, and the place went crazy. You know?
Oh, Chief told me once that was his least favorite partner.
I know it was funny, but I think Jules learned. You know, whatever he learned,
I'm
he
sure.
learned. Yeah, they
sure.
hated. I guess they hated each other, but I guess they whatever the work is the work. You know, just like Rocky and Tony Atlas hated
Tony,
each other.
Yeah.
You know,
right? Same deal.
Yeah. There's another guy who gives back a lot and doesn't get any.
Tony?
Oh, there's another guy who's a piece of, and you know what? You guys are probably, I don't know, Mr. Mooneyham, you might know him a little better, but he puts on an act for everybody. But then if you ever watch a match with him, you can sit right under Tony Atlas's learning tree. He is a very.
Oh, Tony's great. Yeah,
very
Tony's
knowledgeable.
Great.
Yeah, very knowledgeable. But he kind of plays this, like, you know, kind of a, I'm just a dumb guy, and, you know, I don't know anything and all this. Because I don't think if you don't show a lot of respect for the business, I don't think he has a lot of time for you. So he just kind of put on that silly act.
Yeah.
And then,
oh, yeah, he's learned a lot. But I remember when Tony had his first match down the street from where I'm at right now at the newspaper at the old county hall. He actually paid for his ticket. He was booked on the show. And he absolutely did. True story. He paid for his ticket. And believe me, the promoter wouldn't pay him back either when he found out.
Hey, look, it's coming out of your pay. It's too bad. So he gets him twice, right?
That's right.
So I'm looking at this now. Rock and Roll Express should definitely be in. Sarge should be in. Snooker should be. See, I'd vote for everybody. So I mean,
there's so many. You know, I have a problem with this every year. There's so many.
Yeah.
Really good names, and then you go to the managers, and there's so many good managers.
Well,
oh, yeah,
you
Captain
saw
Luke,
earlier on
after.
About, you know, talking about managers, and Mike, that was your column this past
mm-hmm.
Sunday, or yeah, it was this past Sunday, talking about there still being a role for managers. You know, one of the great parts about the Hall of Fame is you can, the non wrestlers, you can vote in as many as you want, and you look at like Albano, Gary Hart, you know, in past years, there's been tons of different managers on there. The role of the manager in a guy like Gary Hart and Lou Albano and those types of guys, I mean, one, the legacy of managers and having to see so many great ones, and is there possibly a way we can get managers back into the business? I don't understand why WWE has such an aversion to them.
Yeah, absolutely. Vince does have an aversion, and I don't understand why. Maybe it's the same deal with tag teams and cruiserweights, you know, which all add to the color and substance of the sport. Managers were, you know, they were absolutely one of my favorite parts of professional wrestling when I was coming up. They added so much to the they made heels. I mean, guys like Sheik and Abby and, you know, guys whose gimmick was not to ever say a word. Who knows if they would have ever been as big as they were without a mouthpiece. Managers added so much to the business back then. And I think there's definitely a place for managers today. I mean, without naming anyone, there's some guys in WWE right now who really can't talk, you know, and they're just not really good interviews, but they're pretty good in the ring. They have a really good presence. But, you know, with a manager, those guys would be over like $1 million. And I brought up the example of Shelton Benjamin. And I've known Shelton for, you know, many, many years. And he comes from up the road in Orangeburg, South Carolina, one of the best athletes I've ever seen. But Shelton was, you know, when that red light came on, Shelton was not the most entertaining guy around. And, you know, if you know Shelton outside the ring, he's very witty, he's very funny, but when he's got a scripted interview, it just doesn't
come across as being Shelton. It doesn't come, at least in WWE, it didn't. I mean, they gave him some really poor scripted material to read, and you know, the first time he ever cut a promo, I said, well, this is definitely not Shelton. This isn't going to work. And the guy was one of the best. Kurt Angle said he was probably the best in-ring guy we've got in the company, but he just couldn't cut a convincing promo, and it wasn't all Shelton's fault. I mean, it was the stuff these writers were giving him, and it just wasn't Shelton. And I think, you know, he had a certain measure of success in WWE, but I always thought Shelton could have been so much bigger, you know, and he's a guy who would have benefited from a manager, and there are a lot of guys like that. So, yes, I think there's definitely a place for managers. And, you know, the one guy I mentioned in the column, I think he's one of the best talkers in the business, is Jimmy Mitchell, a.k.a. Sinister Minister, Father
yep.
Jim, you know, James Vandenberg. That guy is extremely talented. He would be a perfect fit for someone in TNA, someone in WWE right now. You know, he did the stint in TNA, was pretty successful, but I think he's WWE material. I think he could really put the kind of blend the old style manager with the new style 2012 WWE type manager. I think he's a perfect fit.
Absolutely. I agree with that.
Yes.
Do you want to
throw in here, because we're coming up closely to a break here. Do you want to hang on with us?
I can hang for a bit. I'm good.
Okay, because I don't want to get Rich mad at me, so I should probably throw it to break here, so we don't want to take too much time away. So
are we going to hear from the Empire?
Yeah, we're going to hear from the Empire.
You got to answer me one question.
Yeah.
I still haven't been able to figure out, is that two girls talking, or is that one girl talking?
That is two girls talking.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
I love our sponsor. My name is Mike Sempervivi. We'll be right back on Ringside Wrap.
That's a question.
Georgia wrestling fans, you're going to want to make your plans to be at Johnny G's the first, third, and fifth Sunday of every month, 2 p.m. bell time, for Rampage Pro Wrestling television taping. And fans, if you're in Middle Georgia, make sure that you watch Rampage Pro Wrestling on Fox 24, Saturday 9 a.m. on the My 41.2, Saturday at 10 p.m. Cox Communications Cable, Thursday 8, Saturday at noon, and of course, Rampage Rewind, the one-half-hour show on Cox Communications throughout the schedule. Fans, be there.
Hi, I'm Jody Peterman. We know that no one understands what you need better than you do. We take care to guide you through the legal process, ensuring that you're able to make the decisions that are best for you. If you have a personal injury, criminal, or family law issue, please take a look at our website to learn more about our practice. We offer a free initial consultation for personal injury cases. Give us a call at 229-375-5680. We have a reputation for being accessible and treating our clients well. We look forward to hearing from you.
Hello, I'm Guy Terry of Terry and Peterman. At Terry and Peterman, we are committed to representing the hardworking residents of South Georgia in personal injury, criminal, and family law matters. For years, we have worked with college students in this area to ensure legal issues do not disrupt their academic careers. We also represent military families struggling with divorce and family law issues. We rely upon over 30 years of combined experience to provide aggressive representation for our clients.
This is Miss Rachel from The Empire, formerly known as Platinum Championship Wrestling. Every Friday night, The Empire presents the best in professional wrestling at the Academy Theater in Avondale State. We're also at the Masquerade every month or so. Check us out on Facebook. Just look for Platinum Championship Wrestling, and you'll get the latest details on all the hottest action from The Empire,
formerly known as Platinum Championship Wrestling.
We get it. That's every Friday night at the Academy Theater and at the Masquerade as well every month. We'll see you there.
All right, we're back here on Ringside Wrap. sponsored by Terry and Peterman and the girls at Platinum Championship Wrestling and all that other stuff. And I love Kansas City. Here we go. I would never go to Kansas City, ever. I went through Kansas City one time, and it was awful. And the history of wrestling tells me if I would have had a chance to work there, I would have made $15 and frozen to death in the wintertime.
Well, the good news is if you work there now, you can still make that same $15, so that's good.
Actually, you know what? That makes me think of something. I think it was Buddy last week who said, you know, Harley, you'd have to get a job out there, find some place to live, and basically support yourself. But if you wanted to learn something, damn it, Harley Race is a great one to go with. Bob, and we've been, you know, and Mike and I talked about Dory Funk a couple weeks ago, too. As a trainer and as somebody
Florida.
In the business, who is somebody who you would say, you know what, go there?
Go there. Let's see. Well, all the people you guys mentioned, I think Harley School is good. Like I said, my experience at the camp wasn't as positive as some of the others, but then again, my experience level was a lot further along than a lot of the guys. So I think it was going to be tough for them with 60 guys who were probably 5 years or less trying to speed up to catch up with a 17 or 18 year veteran. So I think that was more on me than it was on them. So I'm not going to blame Harley or any of the crew for that. But I've heard nothing but real good things about his school. OVW is still rock solid. Rip Rogers is still Rip Rogers. You know, Nick Dinsmore trains the guys down there. So, I mean, there's plenty of good talent, plenty of good training still available down there. Buddy Wayne, of course, my man in Seattle. Let's see. We have a pretty good couple of schools here. Brian Fury runs. Brian Fury's done quite a bit in New England. And represented himself really well in the Ring of Honor camp. Brian's been around for about 10 years, and he runs it's an offshoot of what Kowalski School used to be, but it's the Chaotic New England Wrestling Academy up in North Andover, Mass., a little bit north of Boston. So I recommend his school real highly. Antonio Thomas is in Springfield. Lance Storm, whoever I've forgotten. I'm sure Dory, of course. anytime and Mike, I think you talked about it, Mr. Mooneyham, that is, a couple weeks ago, you said, yes, College Mike, you said, the good looking one, you said a couple weeks ago that Dory still is getting in there with the guys and stuff like that. And that's kind of what you want. You don't necessarily have to have a match with Dory Funk every time you walk through the door, but hey, let me show you something. This is the idea of what I have for you, or here's how you do a particular move, or here's how you, because that's, I think that's important, because that was the problem with Walter at the end, was that Walter just physically wasn't able to get in the ring and help the guys. So now you have a 2 or 3 year guy working out with you, and you paid for Kowalski's, knowledge, and you're not really getting it as hands on as you would like. So that's
right.
You know, but the like I said, I don't have a school right now, but I work out every Tuesday. At the Fall River PAL, of course, very well known for Scott Hall's disastrous ESPN. But believe it or not, there's actually, you know, a lot of positive things going on there too. So, I work out every Tuesday with those guys, and they have a nice little school there run by Ryan Drew. So I'm trying to think if there's anybody else. I'm sure there's some other. Obviously, the Ring of Honor just announced that they're gonna open their doors publicly again, take classes on October 22nd, and Delirious is probably, you know, when he takes his medication and he can speak, you know, speak coherent sentences and isn't typing nonsense on Twitter and all that stuff, he's probably one of the most underrated, underutilized, most knowledgeable trainers in the business. So, and the guy I probably should send you to talk to next time, Truth Martini, actually runs a hell of a school too. So he's actually got quite a few guys that are knocking on the door, Ring of Honor as well. So,
well, yeah, a lot of people, and we've talked about it off the air, Bob, you know, a lot of people forget that Martini, you know, Saban and Shelley, and being a part of that old, you know, ACE, that Chicago, that whole scene out there and in Michigan, I mean, that Zach Allen, there are a lot of guys that actually, that people have seen that probably have no idea that Truth Martini had a hand in their training.
Oh, yeah, and there's a kid coming up who I really I like. He's had a couple of dark matches for Ring of Honor. I don't think he's gone on. I think he's on TV with QT Marshall, named TD Tadarius Thomas, who's one of the most exciting guys I've ever seen. He's actually has a lot of basis in MMA, but he can actually do a bunch of really wild, interesting, like, kicks and strikes and stuff like that, but not to the point where you're kind of sick of seeing it. Just attacks you at all angles, you know, just some real interesting stuff. And I'm not a super, you know, if you fly, that's great, but give me the rest of the stuff too. And I think once he figures out the rest of the stuff, here's a kid who's in great shape, great attitude, very humble. You can tell he's tough, real tough as nails and could kill you. So that's always a good thing these days. But somebody I really respect and somebody I have a lot of, I think he's on his way up. So it's another guy really, in truth, has had a lot to do with his training. And like I said, he's a real good wrestling mind too. I wish a lot of the younger guys in Ring of Honor, and maybe even some of the older guys too, because I learned it late in my wrestling career, is I wish they would pick the brains of some of these guys a little bit more, because I think we're only going to, at our size, with our budget, we're only going to get there is if we all kind of work together and work for the greater good. Doesn't mean we all have to love each other and, you know, get together for Thanksgiving, but we should at least be able to work cohesively as a team. So,
well, how is your, you know, your match took place, and it's got to.
I think it's actually going to be on the TV. I think it's actually going to be on the TV show too. I think that one and Mikey B's match with Bennett. I call him Mikey B since he was 17. But him and Maria's match, that match is going to be on, I think, is actually going to be an episode of Ring of Honor TV. I think so you heard it here first, folks. But they're going to actually take a couple weeks of Providence and put that on as a Road Rage event too. So, and I think one of my matches is on TV. So if you haven't seen it on pay-per-view, you have no excuse now. So.
Well, there were a lot of people that, you know, I was wondering what the reaction was going to be for it. And it seemed to be generally very good across the board, which I'm not, you know, busting balls here on you, but, you know.
No, no, that's fine.
You're one of those guys that had come into Ring of Honor, you know, and Mikey's another one, and there were a handful of guys who they just didn't want to have any time for, and, you know, Mike has grown on people, or at least people have accepted, begrudgingly maybe, what they're seeing when they see Mike Bennett.
Right.
And some other guys as well, and you, you know, that match was told a, you know, obviously, you know, I'm a little bit biased here, but told a good story. You know, it was you challenged, you're in your hometown as a veteran, and you got to prove something to this kid, and you want to punch him in his pretty little mouth, and you've been tired of dealing with him, and Eddie Edwards in the feud you've had, and it was a good story. And Adam, it's not a title defense for him, but he's facing a salty guy who wants to, you know, kick the crap out of him. And, you know, again, another hurdle for him in his very, very young career. And I thought it told a good story. And again, most of the reaction I saw from, of course, the always hypercritical internet, which I thought was probably going to be negative, ended up being mostly positive. How do you feel about that? And, you know, how is it? Because obviously you look, you know, it's like baseball players or anybody else where you try not to read the papers, but every once in a while you do. And you do want to see exactly, you know, what people are saying and how people are feeling. And what was your reaction to the reaction coming out of that match?
Well, actually, I had a few people say, because a couple of the guys were confused with the match too, but that was more because of my vision, and because there's a lot of different visions of what I should be. But I'm in a position where it's you know, I'm going to get salty here for a second, but it's very tough to get on anyone who, it's very tough to have authority over anyone who truly doesn't give a shit, you know? So it's one of those things where it's like, I've learned about 2 or 3 years ago, and Terry Taylor was probably the guy who was the biggest influence on me with this, is I finally learned how to be myself. And I finally learned how to stop imitating people and just become the best Brutal Bob Evans I could be. And I know that sounds kind of goofy, but once I figured that out, I got so much better, and I just improved my work, and I improved everything, my promos and just overall, you know, everything. I think it's just, you finally, it's kind of like a self-actualization type thing. So a couple of the guys, and I'm not going to name them because it's a valid opinion if you look at it a certain way. A couple of the guys were upset with me. They were kind of mad at Adam. They said, boy, you gave him a lot of that match. he's just the manager. And then I said, guys, there's never been one time on Ring of Honor television where I've been called a manager. I said, maybe the fans have called me a manager. Maybe a couple of the writers have called me a manager. But none of the – I've never been called a manager. I've been a trainer. I've been a wrestler who never got a shot. I've been bitter, an old guy, whatever. But I've never been called a manager. And that's how I looked at it. I looked at it as this is my – that blog that was on the Ring of Honor site was written by me. You know, we don't have ghostwriters. And I pretty much put it out there as a shoot. I said, this is my chance. You're in my backyard. You're going to have to prove something to me. And that's how I designed – Adam had plenty of input. Don't get me wrong. It wasn't like Adam was just the co-star in the movie. I mean, Adam did great and did exactly what he had to do. But the whole thing was, you know, yeah, I'm going to take a stab at it. I'm going to call you out. I'm going to do whatever I can to get a shot in my hometown. And I know I'm not – I know I'm just a sideline guy right now, so I don't expect to get a title match after you just won the belt. But I want to get a shot. I want to see – they give proving ground matches to indie guys I've never heard of, so why not somebody in their own backyard? Why not somebody on their own roster? That's how I – and then as far as the match goes, I looked at it as, like you said, Semp, just a big guy who knows his stuff, who gives Adam everything he can handle, almost beats him, and then Adam went over on me clean. That's how it should have been. And it was a number three match, so I wasn't trying to steal the show away from everybody else, you know. We have a world champion that works a specific way, and his is much more fighting and brawling and not necessarily wrestling holds, so I knew I could do wrestling holds. But I called the whole night. I said, Mondo and Roddy are going to steal the show, which they did, you know, because there was a lot of legit emotion there because these guys are competing, in my opinion, basically for kind of like that same spot, like the, you know, that physically fit wrestler guy who can really show a lot of stuff and show a lot of fire in their own way. Two different guys who do it two different ways, but it's almost the same spot. So there was kind of like a legit, and they're friendly, don't get me wrong, but it's that good, healthy competition, you know? Yeah. So I saw that, and that fire came out, you know? And no, he did not break his nose. He had a cut over his nose. So, but hey, somebody zigs, somebody zags, that's going to happen, you know? I took a super kick in the mouth a little harder than I would have liked to, and that's just the way it goes. Look great on TV. It's good for the business. You know, but well, that's the idea. And then I fought like hell to get out of the figure four. But Adam Cole is the figure four is his deal, and he beat me with the figure four. Of course, that's what he should have done.
Well,
but
that's
what
I liked about it too. It's establishing Adam Cole as he's got one. I'm sorry, as you could probably guess, I'm a little bit partial to the figure four for my favorite growing up. But
be fair to
play. You know, it just it seals a wrestling finishing move.
Yeah.
Well, and
he beat a shooter with it. So it's
yes.
Like, or did he? You know, I mean, because the whole thing is Kyle O'Reilly, for anyone that doesn't know, but he beat Kyle O'Reilly with it, but Kyle still insists that he was trying to get the feeling back in his leg and he didn't tap out. So, which I thought was pretty inventive. So my whole thing was the you know, Adam consciously or subconsciously took me for granted. I got the advantage on him, but then he's proved to me that he could hang and be a true champion and beat me. I don't understand why anyone would have a problem with that story unless they viewed me as a manager, but I've never viewed me as a manager, and no one in the company had, and I'm certainly not going to wrestle like a manager. I'd have done a horrible job. If I went out there and wrestled like Bobby the Brain Heenan, who was incredible at what he did, but, I mean, legit, guys, I'm 4 or 5 inches taller than Adam Cole, and I outweigh him by 40 pounds. With me being scared of him, I don't think that would really... I don't know what that would have looked like, but I don't think it would have been too effective, you know. And he shouldn't be scared of me. So I mean, it just should. I thought we worked the match like it should have been worked, but that's just me.
Well, Bennett's whole debut into the company, you know, it revolved around he's trained by this guy, Brutal Bob Evans, who's pissed off he never got a shot, and he's going to take it out on Ring of Honor through Mike Bennett.
Right.
It's not, you know, I'm surprised by the guys that would say that because I. You know, again, and take you out of the mix, put somebody else in. It seemed like a pretty obvious story to me, but I guess I look at things a little differently than some people.
And Semp, you and I talk. I mean, and I probably let those names slip. And it's some pretty big hitters. I mean, it's some guys that have some pretty strong opinions. And like I said, I just vehemently disagreed.
You didn't
but I also
let those names slip. If you want to do it now for ratings.
yeah, there were Mike Sempervivi and Mike Mooneyham were the two guys that pulled me aside and told me. No, it's just, I'm not going to apologize for wrestling good. I'm not going to apologize for having a good match, doing my job, and doing exactly the way I should have done it. And like I said, I put a lot of work into that match. And that's one thing that actually Mondo's that's one thing that Mondo really has instilled in me. He and I become close real quick just because we're both, you know, he looks at me almost like an older brother just because I'm older, and trying to help him with his, you know, he had some issues before and that, you know, trying to help him with that. And then he's trying to help me up my wrestling, and his whole thing is be as prepared as you possibly can, study, you know, actually scout your opponent, help, you know, try to make the match. And I mean, it just shows Mondo brings something new to the table every time. I mean, it's just that if he doesn't get serious votes for most improved wrestler of the year, then nobody's watching wrestling this year, because this guy has completely reinvented himself. And I challenge anyone to say that he's not top three most improved wrestler, as far as this is a guy who's stuck in as a cheerleader and then oblivion for 4 years and then came back and, you know, him and Taven stole the show in Baltimore and on Ring of Honor TV. He brings something new to the table every single time. He's the only guy that's made Kevin Steen a heel over the past 6 months, guys. Mm. So what does that tell you? He's the only guy that's been able to do that. So, I mean, that's just working well. You know, sorry I'm talking inside, but, you know, it's tough for me to do the whole.
But he was another guy that Ring of Honor fans did not want to take to. And, you know, and he knew this, and he's unsinkable in that he's going to keep coming. This is like Kurt Angle, I remember, did an interview about Vince McMahon. When he first came in, they wanted to, he suplexed Tiger Ali Singh, and we're going to make you a good guy. And Vince heard how the crowd responded and just went, you know what? We're going to ram you down their throats till they just hate you that much that it turns around.
I was at a lot of those dark matches. That's when I was working for WWF pretty regularly as an extra. And I was at a lot of those dark matches where they put him with everybody as a babyface. And it was very tepid. I mean, they didn't boo him out of the building or anything, but he didn't show anything. And then when he came out and they said, yeah, he debuted as a heel. I'm like, huh? But then I said, that's perfect. Like, you know, you think of it as so out of the box. And then I'm like, wow. And who knew we had those chops as far as promos and psychology, especially for a guy who really didn't watch wrestling. I mean, to have that, to have such an aptitude for the ins and outs of wrestling, not just the moves, you know. So, but yeah, that's the idea.
Look at Mondo. Mondo's going to force himself on you and do whatever he needs to do and change up his style against a certain guy or say to you or whatever it's going to be and just, he's just going to keep coming.
Our TV crowd turned him. Baltimore turned him. Baltimore turned him babyface after three shots. There was no intention of him turning. And then they just, you know, then everybody turned him. And then the angle in New York, that deal was actually supposed to be done where he said a few choice things to Maria, you know, which weren't
very
his idea.
Rude, by the way.
Well, weren't his idea and weren't written by him, and that's all I'll say about that. But he did say the most outlandish thing in Ring of Honor history or whatever, however you want to say it. But again, that was actually for somebody else, and I won't mention that, but I won't mention who it was, but it was somebody who kind of fell through and didn't work out. So they said, well, how about Mondo? You know, and then again, it just shows by upping your game and being there and being ready to go, you never know when your number's going to get called for something. And, you know, like I said, that wasn't originally his spot. But now there's probably going to be, and you'll see it unfold at TV, there's probably some wacky stuff that's going to happen with him and Bennett, you know. So, and then you'll see me on color commentary, which is great because it's just me and Kevin Kelly yelling at each other for 4 minutes while Nigel just sits back. So
he had to be loving that.
Oh, it was great. It was me and Kevin Kelly exchanging inside jokes for 4 minutes and trying not to make each other laugh. So, yes, it was great. And Nigel watched the whole thing and probably didn't know what was going on. So,
now, Bob, we're getting pressed up against another break here. Before we come back, are you willing to stay on, or what do you got going on here?
I will stay on if you guys are willing to have me.
Are you kidding?
Of course, let him go.
I'm very impressed by your knowledge and passion of the business.
Thank you. I will hang on then after you speak so nicely of me.
Thank you.
Well, that's okay. Good. So we're going to throw to a break.
with our main sponsors, Terry and Peterman, who hopefully will get me out of legal trouble one day if they can ever, you know, they ever move up north and become a national company and, you know, you get barred in Maryland or however that works there.
Well,
but,
I know if you're a college student, they want to keep you out of trouble so you can concentrate on your studies, and that's always a good idea. So,
hey, look, as a kid that may or may not have gotten a disorderly conduct on the campus of Towson University, I'll neither confirm nor deny possibly needing a lawyer while you're in college. But
that has yet to be proven.
Hopefully that expunged money actually worked, but any of that, we'll be right back on Ringside Wrap.
Hi, this is Emily Richards for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. One person's negligence shattered my life in a single instant. You see, my little sister Annie was killed by a drunk driver. Please, remember those you love. Friends don't let friends drive drunk. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Here at the GED Pep Talk Center, we've got a pep talk that can motivate you.
Sometimes things don't always turn out the way you want them to.
You can improve your future.
Now get your game face on and take the first step towards a better life.
Hurry up. Don't make me repeat myself.
Whatever level of motivation you need, we've got a pep talk for you. Call 1-877-38-YOUR-GED or visit yourged.org for your pep talk and for free classes in your area. GED is a registered trademark of the American Council on Education, brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
Hi, I'm Jody Peterman. We know that no one understands what you need better than you do. We take care to guide you through the legal process, ensuring that you're able to make the decisions that are best for you. If you have a personal injury, criminal, or family law issue, please take a look at our website to learn more about our practice. We offer a free initial consultation for personal injury cases. Give us a call at 229-375-5680. We have a reputation for being accessible and treating our clients well. We look forward to hearing from you.
Hello, I'm Guy Terry of Terry and Peterman. At Terry and Peterman, we are committed to representing the hardworking residents of South Georgia in personal injury, criminal, and family law matters. For years, we have worked with college students in this area to ensure legal issues do not disrupt their academic careers. We also represent military families struggling with divorce and family law issues. We rely upon over 30 years of combined experience to provide aggressive representation for our clients.
This is Miss Rachel from The Empire, formerly known as Platinum Champions of Wrestling. Every Friday night, The Empire presents the best in professional wrestling
at the Academy Theater in Avondale State.
We're also at the Masquerade every month or so.
Check us out on Facebook. Just look for Platinum Championship Wrestling.
And you'll get the latest details on all the hottest action from The Empire,
formerly known as Platinum Championship Wrestling.
We get it. That's every Friday night at the Academy Theater and at the Masquerade as well every month. We'll see you there.
Hi, I'm Drew Brees, NFL quarterback for the New Orleans Saints, here with Bugs Bunny to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you fuel your body and your mind.
So what do you like to throw around the football like Drew?
Skateboard.
Play frisbee in the park.
Ride a bike.
Kick the soccer ball around.
Or dance in your room.
Just move it your way.
Because nothing makes you feel better than moving every day.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
So be a player.
You'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
Move it your way and be a player.
Get up and play an hour a day, Doc. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
That's right, at letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
the game, going back in the alley. And I kept rolling them seven, winning all them pots. My luck was so good, I could do no wrong. I just kept on rolling and controlling them balls.
All right, we're back here on Ringside Rap. Mike Semper VB here, joined by Mike Mooneyham and Bob Evans. And I do want to say, as we're in our final segment here, one, and as much as I love doing the show with Les, Mike, I love talking to you, and Bob, obviously, love having you on as well. So I did want to get that out of the way, some more schmoozing and knee pad work.
Oh, I feel the same. I mean, you guys are great. You know, I'm like an old-timer at this point, and it's just it's so nice to see, you know, younger guys like you and Bob that have such a passion for the business and are so knowledgeable. I mean,
well, I think like Bob too. I mean, we're both pushing 40 or possibly 50.
Youngsters.
But you know, it's like I like the ability, and people. I got into this with Adam Summers actually on the show last year when he came up to the Hall of Fame voting, and I probably take it too seriously. I take it incredibly, incredibly seriously, because I look at it as, yes, this is not, you know, brain surgery here. This is not, you know, a pro football style Hall of Fame or anything like that. But who am I to judge someone else's? If somebody was judging my career that didn't know me, and mm-hmm. I would expect them to look at the facts and not be, you know, mm-hmm. a jackass about it, and to treat it incredibly, remarkably seriously. And I actually have some, not complaint, I would never say it, as far as people mm-hmm. that I know have ballots that I would question if they should. But, you know, that's fine. You know, because somebody probably is doing that to me. So, yeah, I take it incredibly seriously, and I get a chance to doing shit to shows, and I didn't realize the reach that the Progressive Power Hour show had from way back in the day of. This is my way of giving back. And, again, I'm the last of an era, and Bob definitely knows this because he taped a lot of that, you know, TV, and it's just the same way I did, just the same way everybody in our generation did in the 80s and studied and loved this stuff, and we were the last of seeing the 70s and the 80s come together and just basically get absorbed into two groups. And to be able to pass that on into to the passion of why we became pro wrestling fans or sports entertainment fans, I don't really care what you want to call it now, as long as there's a canvas mat and ring ropes, you know, it's going to be pro wrestling. So, you know, to be able to pass that on and to show people why, you know, this is important and why things matter, why things happen the way that they do is, I don't know, I take that to be a, it's like a serious, real job here.
Well, you know, I kind of feel the same, and it's sort of, my deal is to keep the torch burning for, you know, the 60s and the 70s, and I guess as far back as the 50s, because, you know, that's an era that is going to be forgotten pretty soon if we don't try to keep it alive. And it's really neat to hear you guys, you know, mention wrestlers from that era and keep those names out there. I mean, I don't, you know, when I did the column on Rip Hawk, I mean, Rip was a, you know, one of the biggest heels and one of the biggest draws ever in the Carolinas. But, you know, you wonder how many people are still around who remember Rip. And, you know, Rip started in the late 40s. But I think it's very important that we keep these guys' names out there and remember them for what they were. And that's, they were huge stars back then. So,
well,
yeah, I guess I've got a passion there as well.
Well, it was kind of funny because I'm going through that now, Mr. Mooneyham, Double M. But
the Double M, that's what Jeff called. I call Jeff Double J, and he calls me Double M.
Oh, nice. That's good. But no, that's one of the things that I'm dealing with too. Like I'm training kids in there, you know, 19, 20, 25.
Yeah, right.
And actually on my Facebook, and I think you saw it because I know you, well, you responded to the Georgia, but I was talking about how the Roddy Piper turn in 86 where they didn't do anything to turn him. All he did is leave for a couple months to do They Live and then come back. All they did is have Adrian Adonis take over the flower shop and do that. And then Piper, because I was there when Piper came back.
Yeah.
And did the whole thing where he intervened on Adonis and it said the boss is back and the place went crazy. And I was you know, how can I miss you if you don't go away? It was that type of a thing. And I was trying to tell the guys, like, you see Piper now, and even though I think Piper's still really good, and he's probably one of the coolest guys, if you've ever, I mean, you you guys have probably met him, but I've never seen anyone who can make you feel like you're the only. I heard Bill Clinton is like this, but he actually makes you feel like you're his best friend, like you're the most important person in the room when he meets
he
you.
He does,
and it's incredible. Like, you made such a positive impression on me.
You feel like you've known him your entire life.
Exactly, and plus, like, I was always such a huge Piper fan anyway, so it wasn't really tough, you know, because he was. Him and Hogan are the two guys that got me into watching wrestling. So,
right.
Like so many others, but to see just a turn happen so naturally and just let the guys handle it, let the guys do the turn, you know, like let the bookers line it up and just let the guys do their thing instead of we're going to script everything, we're going to micromanage everything, just let it breathe. You know, it's like I kind of get offended when Brian and Vinny review those shows with Piper as the coach, and they're saying it in jest because they make Piper sound so wacky, but I understand every single thing Piper's trying to do with these guys. But he is on such a different level, and his brain works so differently from everybody else's.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like the old story of when Bobby Orr was like, he's like, kid, I've been showing you this move for a while. How come you don't get it? And the kid turned to him and said, because you're Bobby Orr. You know?
right. Yep.
It's like, I mean, Piper's just on such a different level, and his mind just works so differently.
Yeah.
I swear to God, he, you know, did some of the medication and stuff he did probably just to slow himself down so he could be on Earth with the rest of us. But just because he was such a wrestling genius and God touched him with that talent.
Yeah.
So when these guys like are being coached by one of the greatest of all time, it probably does come across as wacky because he's just telling them to do something and expecting them just to do it like right.
That's right.
Yeah, and it's like it probably does come across weird, but I understand what he's trying to get them to do.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't think Brian and Vinny are quite as invested in the business as I am on that level.
Yeah.
So, you know, even though they both had matches, I just don't think it's the same, you know, because I've coached, you know, this has been my most successful year. I mean, I've had five people sign a contract, so, I mean, it's been a real good year for me, but... my first WWE contract signing, Chase Donovan, is down there now too. So it's been a great year. I mean, I've had all three companies have picked up people of mine. So and I've coached over 100 people to turn pro. So I know what it takes to motivate.
Sure,
And it's different. It's like being a coach with everything else. It's different. You know, if somebody's very athletically talented, you have to talk to them about the head game. If somebody is really smart, this is usually not the way it goes. The psychology part is usually the toughest part to teach. But if there's people that have that down, now you have to go and I might actually have to bring somebody in to get work on their athleticism because that's not my strong point.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
you know, but there's different ways to do it. But I just get kind of offended, not overly offended, but I just get kind of like, I don't know, Sam, you probably hear it too and you probably feel the same way. But, like, they're kind of mocking what Piper does and he just does it on such a higher level. I don't think... You know, I don't think I think he's just trying to reach these guys in a different way. And it's like, he should be able to walk into a room and show, like, he should be able to tell in 2 seconds if you have it or not. Like, he shouldn't have to meet these kids. It doesn't have anything to do with that. So, I don't know. But,
well, you know, we talk about all of the great angles from years ago. But, I mean, is it any surprise that they came up with these angles? Because you have to remember, these guys rode together in cars.
Absolutely.
6-7 days a week. And they went, you know, 200, 300 mile trips. Can you imagine all of the great storylines that were created by these guys going from city to city?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, that's where all of these angles were born. They weren't actually created by a booker in an office. They were created on the road when these guys were traveling, you know, had a few beers in them and, you know,
like
a baloney blowout. I mean, that's where these came from.
People get mad when they you know, you could put any guy, you know, back in that era in the ring with each other and they'd have a good match. And, you know, I guess, you know, there seems to be a mindset now that people are like, people who have been in the business for a long time who are stuck in that bubble in WWE who can't figure out why they can't do it. And it's like, well, take for example, Adonis and Piper. What was his real name? Keith Frankie, if I'm not mistaken. He wrestled in Los Angeles and in California way back when. Well, who was the big star there in the late 70s? It was Roddy Piper. These guys all intermingled. They all cut paths. They all knew somebody that knew somebody. And, oh, who trained you? And you'd be able to know without ever working with a guy, you know, after locking up with him, they knew they could feel each other out. And that's, you know, that's gone, and those things came organically. I mean, I can remember sitting there watching. Bob, you were there. I remember sitting there watching Roddy Piper at the bat break up the flower shop, and they were going to the retirement match, and they played Frank Sinatra's My Way to a vignette of Piper's clips, you know, leading into the wrestling. It just, you know, that type of stuff, like, you can try to pull it out of thin air and create it, but it's, you do create, and not to say you don't create it, but it creates from something that came organically.
I challenge anyone to look at, and it's probably one of the most unsung promos of that WrestleMania 3, because I probably have 6 or 7 hours of the tape just in the build-up leading it to it, all the angles and stuff. I dare anyone, this is top 10 promos in WWE history, in my opinion, is the one, the farewell promo that Piper does, the last Piper's Pit before he goes to WrestleMania, where he goes, Daddy's coming home. It's incredible. Yeah. And it's like, it's not even looked at as like one of his biggest promos. And I was like, he talked, like, it was basically a shoot. Like, I mean, I'm sure it was a little bit was manipulated, obviously, but I mean, it was like, you know, and just, you know, I'm getting goosebumps about it now, because it's like, the guys aren't allowed, and I don't blame anyone. I blame, you're in the fishbowl, right? It's incestuous. What happens the producers write for the wrestlers who do what the producers say, who write for the wrestlers who do what the producers say, who write for, it's just all in a big circle, and the guys aren't allowed to create anymore. And then if you go, well, just give me bullet points, and then you kind of drop the ball one time, they freak out, they might micromanage it, and they go, you're never going to go unscripted again, you're never going to do this. And it's just, we don't need to script these guys. Just let them talk. It's the same thing I say about the matches. Like, we have all this wrestling knowledge, but you have Arn Anderson telling you how to wrestle. Arn Anderson should watch me wrestle and tell me how to get better afterwards. I'm not saying fire Arn Anderson. He's awesome. But I'm saying, why am I wrestling like the way Arn Anderson wants me to wrestle? Why am I not wrestling the way I want to wrestle? And then Arn Anderson goes, I like a lot of what you did.
Right.
But now these two or three things, why don't we throw those out and then do, I would recommend this. And I'm like, that's great, because, like I said, Terry Taylor has been such a big influence on me, is one of those guys who, as long, Delirious is like this too. Delirious is a fan of anybody who's good. If you're good at what you do, he's a fan of yours. He's not telling you to be different. Believe it or not, Cornette's the same way. Cornette doesn't want you to be, he may add something to you, and you may not even agree with it. You know, there's been stuff he's done with me that I haven't agreed with, but he's trying to help. He's trying to make it better. Right. He's trying to add to the package. But he's never told me, there have been times when I've actually overruled him on how I'm going to wrestle, and he's gone with it, you know, because he has that confidence in me. And that's, you know, and like I said, Delirious and I are probably more peers as far as age and experience and level and all that stuff. So I think he understands the wrestler mentality a little more. So he just kind of lets me do my thing. And plus, we've wrestled each other, so he kind of knows the vibe there too. So it's different. But again, I think we're micromanaging the guys so much that we don't give them a chance to fall on their face on their own.
Yep. Yeah.
I think we're critiquing them too much before we see what they have first. And I think we're sucking a lot of life out of them. You know?
Everything has to be perfect.
And,
you know, that's not how it was back in the day.
No,
your mistakes. You took your bumps.
Go watch WWE 24/7. Watch those matches.
Yep.
I mean, there's matches where the guys are totally on different pages. They're not particularly good. There's matches that are phenomenal. And I guarantee you that neither time where they sat there and talked it over with their agent for 2.5 hours and like, you know, we have to, it's just, you know, give me 15 minutes and this guy's up and you're down and see you later. And that's it, you know, and I trust you guys, you know, the mat is made of canvas because I want you to paint on it, you know. So
there you go. That's it.
Well, I hate to have to play the bad guy, you know, cram this in here, but I certainly lost track of times. So I do want to mention tomorrow night on Peach State Pandemonium, which is another show, if you love the history of wrestling, you're not listening to it, why not? Bobby Oates.
Yeah, why not?
Or Bobby Simmons, Jerry Oates, and Mike Norris are going to have Scott Teal, the author, on tomorrow night, and a special surprise guest as well. So
it's not
going to
be me, though. It's not going to be me, I promise. It's not going to be you,
but what do you got going on?
By the way, I do have a teaser announcement. In a couple weeks, I will make the announcement that might get me fired from Ring Announcer and from Ring of Honor, and I will make it here. You guys have always been good to me, and it's the announcement that I have promised for months, and I'll make it, and I guarantee that it will make Mike Mooneyham want to write an article about me.
All right.
Whether he wants to or not, now that I put all the pressure on him. So this will be of national wrestling national, not world national, not like, you know, obviously not like the war or anything, but I mean it'll be of wrestling national prominence. It will.
All right.
Yes.
All right.
So, and it should be a positive thing, unless I get my ass fired, then it doesn't matter. But.
Well, this I cannot wait for.
But if I do get my ass fired, guys, I'm doing it anyway. So there you go.
Well, in a way, that's good, because you'll always have Wednesday nights off to chat with us then.
Perfect.
Hey, Mike, what do you got coming up here on Sunday?
Doing a story on a new ECW documentary that's
Ooh.
Been in the making for like 12 years. These two guys, they were 19 years old at the time. They scored a lot of really big interviews back toward the final days of ECW, and now they've revisited ECW, attended the hardcore reunion, and they've got probably 50 or 60 hours of really good footage and ready to sort of mold it into a documentary. And it's I've seen a little bit, and it's really, really hard hitting, and think it'll be well received.
Cool.
Awesome. And, well, I won't hype up my stuff. Everybody knows what that is already. So
Brutal Bob Evans on Twitter.
Exactly. Les Thatcher not on Twitter, but at Brutal Bob Evans. Damn right.
Les Thatcher still not on Twitter.
No, but you know who else is? Mike Mooneyham is too.
And Dory Funk.
Yeah, Dory Funk Jr. on Twitter.
Yep. Well, if Dory Funk Sr. was on Twitter, that'd be weird.
God. You know, that would be the perfect way to end it. So,
yeah.
Everybody out there, and again, Mike, thank you so much for filling in for Les. And
my pleasure,
so
guys.
Thank you so much for being on, man.
Oh, guys, it was great. It flew by. I really appreciate the time to share some wrestling stories with you guys.
Also, too, and you know, I'll just stick this in right before the ending here. You know, Mike talked about keeping the 50s alive. So remember, folks, we wouldn't be here talking about this stuff right now if it wasn't for the 50s and it wasn't for that explosion. So remember that as history goes along. So everybody, thank you so much for joining us, and we will talk to you next week.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.